This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Republicans vote to remove guidance issued to clerks that allowed them to fill in missing information on absentee ballots. Plus, a top Republican is not caving into Donald Trump's demands to overturn Wisconsin's 2020 election results. And candidate Tim Michaels is facing backlash from NRA officials after he falsely claimed he secured their endorsement. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 22nd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., it was another busy week in politics. I say that often, but it was jam-packed once again. As we are inching closer to the primary election, Republican lawmakers on the GOP-controlled Rules Committee voted to eliminate a guidance that was issued by the Wisconsin Elections Commission that basically allowed clerks to fill in missing witness address information on absentee ballot certificates. Now, opponents of eliminating this rule basically say it will impact election officials who will have to track down these witnesses to mail their ballot back to fill in the missing information before Election Day. And election officials already have their hands tied. They're very busy this time of year. But, of course, Republicans say, well, it wasn't in state law. WEC shouldn't be able to issue this guidance. Dems on the committee called the move, quote, disgusting. They thought it was common sense. Meanwhile, like I said, Republicans said it was illegal. So let's first take a listen to both the arguments.
Obviously, I'm going to speak in opposition to the suspension of this rule. It absolutely makes no sense. We have Wisconsin Elections Commission. They have a function. They're made up of three Republicans, three Democrats. They've given us some rules that will really help us in terms of the election process. We have got clerks that are overworked, underpaid, and they are fantastic people, and we give them no guidance by suspending this rule. This is a horrible mistake, but it continues the road that the Republicans are going down to try to make elections questionable, to try to provide litigation so that any time their candidate loses, they can go into court and fight because they don't have the votes. I mean, we're affecting elderly, disabled people by the action we're taking today, or non-action by suspending the rule. And it's a sad time in our democracy that we have to stoop to these levels in order to prevent people from legitimately voting in our democracy.
WEC is attempting to create a new law on their own in Emergency Rule 2209 and not interpret existing statute. That is a core legislative function left to the legislature, not executive agencies. Emergency Rule 2209 is the exact opposite of an implementation statute. It's an order to clerks not to implement the statute that is on the books. WEC cannot do that, and the rule should be suspended for that reason. The emergency rule also attempts to create a definition of address that is incomplete and unclear, which WEC also lacks statutory authority to create. It's an issue that must be clarified by the legislature. We attempted to do that with two bills that were vetoed, and I'm sure the legislature will come back and make another attempt in the next session.
J.R., we previewed this happening last week, so we knew it was expected. But it does just come very close to, you know, the primary election. Overall, I think there's just kind of this back and forth that's going on right now, where basically WEC is saying, well, you know, we don't have to implement this rule yet because we haven't met and voted and put it into, you know, commissioner's vote. Meanwhile, Republicans are saying, hey, we already did our vote. You guys should stop doing this or we're going to sue you. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
So this comes with a twist from last week. So we thought last week that this vote was about wiping out the guidance period. Turns out there's guidance and there's rules. Mm-hmm. So what do I mean by that? Agencies can give guidance. They don't, the question when they rise level of a rule. A rule has to go through the process where you submit it to the legislature for review. The Elections Commission is arguing that the rule that was suspended this week told clerks what they must do when there's missing information in an absentee ballot envelope. The guidance from 2016 said what they can do with missing information. The commission says that vote suspends the rule but doesn't impact the guidance, and the commission must vote to rescind that guidance. Here's the rub. The commission is split 3-3 between Democrats and Republicans. The three Democrats in the commission will never vote to rescind the guidance, telling clerks what they may fill in. And Jacobs, for example, the past chair, Democratic member of the commission, argues that, look, it is nonsensical to say to a voter or to a clerk, you should call the voter and ask him or her, do you want your vote to count? Because there's, she says, what you're saying is there's a mistake on your ballot. We envelope. We have to call you and ask what you want us to do. Well, of course I want you to fix it, she says, because that's, you want your vote to count. Republicans, however, say, look, you don't have that authority. Their rub with the Elections Commission is, it, in their minds, it constantly exceeds the gray area and goes beyond what it was allowed to do. And this is the rub of the commission in general, because you're charged with administering elections. Where do you cross the line from filling in the blanks to creating new policy? Now, Steve Noss, co-chair of the JCRAR, wants a lawsuit. To do that, you have to get legislative leaders to approve going to get, you know, attorneys and filing a lawsuit. We also have already have a lawsuit filed. Last week, I think it was, in Waukesha County, the Waukesha County GOP, and some of the parties sued seeking order to prohibit clerks from doing this. Where is this going to end up? The state Supreme Court. The question is when. We are 2 weeks out from a primary. We are a couple months out from a general election. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin has not proven enthusiastic about taking up big changes to election right laws right for an election. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this will be clarified before then. Then what happens? Well, if we have a situation where there's a close election in November, do you have ballots? Let's just pick on Milwaukee, because it's Republicans pick on most of the time. If the Milwaukee clerk fills in missing information, because it's still some gray area here, do we see a lawsuit trying to throw out those ballots mm-hmm. in Milwaukee? Maybe. I don't like to predict things, but this is where we could be heading for November 2022.
And overall, this is kind of Republicans using their power through the legislature mm-hmm. to try to control yes. WEC overall, because as we know, Governor Evers vetoed, I believe, 9 GOP election bills, or I think it was a little bit more than that.
They
Sorry.
Say 22.
22, yeah. I'm mistaking those with the abortion bills. Excuse me. He's vetoed all of them. So this is kind of their workaround of what they're trying to do and what their mission is. And we know all of the Republican candidates running for governor have basically vowed to sign some of these election bills into law if elected. So we'll see what happens in the future. But this is kind of just the way Republicans want to try to get things done to clarify some rules going forward. They also got the victory not too long ago with the state Supreme Court ruling in their favor to ban ballot drop boxes and ruling only the voter themselves can mail in their ballot, absentee ballot, or return it at their local clerk's office. So,
and the other rub is they feel like their clerks, and I say theirs because rural areas less populated, they're not filling stuff in. They feel like it's Madison and Milwaukee and the big cities. They're the ones doing this stuff. It's an unfair treatment of ballots when their clerks don't do it, but these clerks do.
And it's curious, too, how many ballots are we talking, mm-hmm. you know, in previous elections that did have this type of missing information? Would it sway one way or the other? Because Wisconsin, as we know, is a battleground, yes. and we have plenty of close elections. I'm assuming there might be another close one in November, but who knows?
Yeah.
Staying on the election front, former President Donald Trump once again pressured Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, making a post on Truth Social, his own social media app, since he is banned from many others, basically saying, you know, come on out. You got to do this. You got to decertify the election. And Robin Voss is sticking with his guns and saying, I am not going to do that. There is no pathway. So Donald Trump basically posted, this is summarizing, this is not a time to hide, but a time to act. I don't know if his upcoming primary opponent, talking about Voss's primary opponent, feels certain if he will do well. Robin Voss, you must get the voters in Wisconsin to do this. Voss also spoke to WISN, a Milwaukee TV station, saying, you know, I respect President Trump and his case, but we can't do this. I explained to him it's not allowed under the state constitution. So this is probably, I don't know, 3-4 times, mm-hmm. at least twice in the past week, Trump has asked Voss to do this, and he's basically saying, no way, Jose.
This is going to sound similar to what I said before, but mm-hmm. it's never going to be enough. No matter what Robin Voss does, it's never going to be enough. Now, what I want to know is, will Donald Trump do anything?
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that Trump's word carries some weight in primaries. If you look at the primary with Robin Voss and Adam Steen of Burlington, Voss has got a financial advantage. He also has independent groups doing mail on his behalf. I'm not sure about digital ads, but there's money pouring into that district to help Robin Voss to ensure he wins that primary. We're all wondering if Donald Trump's going to come to Wisconsin for Tim Michaels, who he's endorsed in the governor's race. You can imagine a scenario in which Donald Trump in Wisconsin takes a swipe at Wisconsin Republicans who won't vote to decertify. Will he go after Robin Voss? Will that sway the primary? I don't know that by itself is that enough, but it can be an uncomfortable evening if Donald Trump's in Wisconsin before the primary and taking shots at Robin Voss.
And does he endorse Adam Steen?
Yeah.
Remains to be seen. He's also put his backing behind Tim Michaels, like you mentioned. But who else might he, I guess, put a post on his social media that he's going to be backing? And it's been pretty split across the nation, Trump endorsement candidates winning and those who have not. So it kind of remains to be seen what actually happens here in Wisconsin. Also, speaking of Tim Michaels, he faced a lot of criticism from the National Rifle Association after his campaign sent flyers basically falsely claiming that he got the NRA endorsement. Of course, this endorsement would be huge to his campaign coming off the heels of the former president also backing him as well. But the NRA officials weren't too pleased to learn about this. This happened on Monday. Scott Meyer, who is a lobbyist and does work for the NRA in Wisconsin, says all this came out of the blue. Stunned is the best word to describe it. I have never seen this before. Tim Michaels' campaign basically called this a mistake. A spokesman, Chris Walker, for the Michaels campaign said, our direct mail shouldn't have indicated that our rating as an endorsement, but basically we're trying to communicate AQ rating from the NRA. Now, these ratings that I'm talking about is how the NRA rates candidates, mm-hmm. but since Michaels hasn't really been elected to office yet, he has this AQ rating where other officials have an A or yep. et cetera. I believe Clayfish and Rantham yep. have an A rating.
You have to be in office and have yeah. a record. Something mm-hmm. you voted on, something that you point to as a record, that gets you an A. If you are not been elected before, you can get an AQ, which means they believe you're going to defend Second Amendment rights the way they want them to be defended, and you're good to go. There are also lower grades, which Democrats often get, not Republicans. That's besides the point. So Michaels took his AQ and turned it into an endorsement. Now, what I wonder is, okay, the NRA is not happy about this. Will the NRA go out and do, like, mailers to its members or communication to members saying, this guy's lying to you? Or will it just make this statement, let it lie? One of the challenges for them could be, or downsides, is you take a shot at Michaels and he wins, that could be a strained relationship. For Michaels, how does this impact him? Because if the internet doesn't do anything, you and I are dorks about politics. We follow everything. We're on Twitter all the time. The average voter is not.
Right.
The average voter is probably not seeing much of this controversy about the NRA mailer.
That up.
So yeah. there's honestly, will the voters see that endorsement, false endorsement, on the mail piece, or will it see the reaction, the coverage of what's going on? I don't know. So I don't think a whole lot of downside for Michaels just yet. It depends what the NRA does. If it does something, then yeah, it could hurt. But otherwise, I don't know. Maybe not so much.
Right. And are you just looking at the headline? Mm-hmm. Like you said, are you even on Twitter? So we really don't know how much is going to impact him. But we are going to get to end the show. Maybe he'll be asked about this at the governor's debate that's going to be this Sunday. I think maybe it's just over with, but maybe we could see other the candidates up there, Clayfish and Rantham, take shots at him for this. Then maybe it would get a wider audience. Yep. Remains to be seen. All right. Also this week, the Attorney General sues a bunch of companies, about 18, over PFAS contaminants. So the Attorney General filed a lawsuit on Wednesday alleging that 20 companies knew about the harmful impacts of PFAS but didn't mention it to the broad public. Now, Call is seeking nearly $1 billion in reimbursements to the state that was spent to address PFAS contamination and cleanup efforts. So basically, this has been a really big campaign issue for Governor Evers, and we know this is in parts of Wisconsin. PFAS contaminants is actually really impacting people's water and daily lives. But a lot of the business community basically saying, you know, why are you targeting us? We've been trying to do everything we can. Scott Manley, who's the executive Vice President of Government Relations for WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, basically says, you know, this sends a chilling message to manufacturers and their middle-class workers that Governor Evers and Call are suing businesses simply for making a lawful product. So we'll see where this goes. It's definitely, like I said, a big issue for the Evers administration. They talk a lot about it. Evers has allocated a lot of money to try to contain this, and kind of goes with his MO with, you know, clean energy, clean water agenda that he's been talking about since being elected.
They're not getting much help from the legislature in their minds, the governor's mm-hmm. minds, you know, so they're unhappy about that. Two, the DNR board, remember, is still controlled by Walker appointees, approved a standard for PFAS that is higher than the new federal standard. Critics say the federal standard is so low, you can't test for it. It's impossible to meet. But this is an important issue because, for if it's in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Peshtigo, Madison, out west. This is an issue. We're seeing really troubling statistics out of the Peshtigo area especially about what's going on with health up there. So I'm wondering is how the lawsuit's going to proceed, and are there other avenues for Evers to try and go around the legislature and the DNR board to try and deliver some quote-unquote wins on this issue?
Yeah, we've talked about it too before. Republicans only really care if it's in their district, right? There's a pretty big state that we live in. And if, you know, if it's not happening in your community, why do you want to invest money in it?
It's a cost. I mean, the paper industry has talked about like billions of dollars and what it would impact them. And, you know, the paper industry will argue, look, we are struggling as it is. We have very small margins. This is not something that we can tackle, and we didn't do anything wrong.
All right. I mentioned it earlier on the show. We're kind of going to recap last Sunday's debate, which was with the Democratic candidates running for U.S. Senate. And then we'll be looking ahead to the governor's debate that will be happening this Sunday for the Republican candidates. But let's first recap, JR, on Sunday. Not really big surprises in the topics that they talked about, abortion, inflation, gun safety, climate change, during their first and only, I believe, televised debate on WTMJ. But there was some people took some shots at some people. It wasn't at Lieutenant Governor Barnes, who was leading in the polls, but Nelson took a shot at Godlewski for not voting in the 2016 election when she was working for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And basically, Godlewski fired right back. So let's first take a listen, then we'll kind of recap some other big moments.
We need to expand the Supreme Court because the Republicans have stacked. Because of Donald Trump, he was able to get three appointments. And he was able to get three appointments because in 2016, people here did not turn out to vote, including Sarah Godlewski. And because of that, we have three Supreme Court justices. The only way to do this is to expand the Senate. By expanding the Senate, we need to elect someone from Wisconsin who could win and go there, get rid of the filibuster, push legislation through that will expand it.
I don't need to be lectured by any men about how important the 2016 election was. And look, I am the only person on this stage in 2016 who left their job to join the Hillary Clinton campaign to become the director of women's outreach to do everything I could to defeat Donald Trump. I traveled the state organizing women and to make sure that he would not win. So I don't need to be lectured about how important this really is.
We also heard Godlewski, who is the only female in the race, basically criticize her opponents for not advocating more for abortion rights, abortion access before Roe was overturned. That was a key point of during the debate. But Jared, what else did you think really stood out?
I watched debates for moments that could go viral or go on a TV ad. Godlewski this morning put out a TV ad taking a clip of her not engaging Nelson, but talking about how I'm not going to be if you know you're restore women's right to choose, we're send a woman to defeat Ron Johnson, saying, where were you guys before Roe was overturned? Where were you? Where was your commitment? I'm glad you're talking about it now. That's a TV ad now running statewide, broadcast cable and digital, seven figures, don't have the exact numbers yet, but there's your ad moment. Other thing was, nobody took a shot at either Mandela Barnes or Alec Lazary. Now, Nelson has taken shots at Lazary before, saying, this is a billionaire's kid. If we nominate him to take on Ron Johnson, it will actually hurt us if Tim Michaels is running against Tony Evers. But Nelson went after Godlewski and then didn't throw a punch the rest of the evening. It's kind of odd because the pecking order has been Barnes, Lazary, Godlewski, and Nelson. If you're Nelson, you got to punch above your weight class, right? Go after the guys ahead of you. Why not go after Lazary? Did he get spooked by that exchange with Godlewski? I don't know. Otherwise, there was not like a real game-changer moment in that debate that people are going to go, ah, that was really big. So the Godlewski had a good moment, but that was one moment when she's in third place. I don't know if it's enough to kind of springboard her up the top of the pack, but it definitely didn't do anything to take Mandela out of the front-runner status in this race.
And there wasn't any big surprises on policy issues or anything, something said that went viral as well.
No.
Looking ahead to this upcoming Sunday, Clayfish, Rantham, and Tim Michaels will take the stage. This will be Michaels' first time in a debate setting, so that's something to keep an eye on. And we'll kind of, I mean, I think elections will definitely be coming up, inflation probably, but kind of just remains to be seen what we actually hear from the candidates and how they kind of go after each other. We already know Clayfish has been launching multiple attack ads against Michaels, and we'll see what maybe what he wants to respond to that and see what happens.
So just overnight, the PAC supporting Clayfish added $1.5 million more to its TV buy going after Michaels. That's now $2.3 million between July 6th and August 9th. A PAC now has emerged going after Clayfish. Sunrise in America Political Fund, Political Action Fund, can't find much about it so far. A Florida-based group. It's done digital. Now it's doing mail. There's a really slickly produced YouTube video that they've got on their website. I'm going to bet you money that ends up in a TV ad before August 9th. And then we have Clayfish going after Michaels with a mailer about gas taxes, saying that he sided with Tony Evers. He got rich off of this thing, that kind of thing. So the stage is set for some tension there, some fights. In talking to people about that race so far, there is a sense that Michaels has momentum, is some kind of lead possibly. We're seeing all kinds of polls like pop up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't trust polls on Twitter. I want them in my hands before I write about them. So
right.
I'm not going to share any numbers from those. But there's definitely a sense that Michaels has more in terms of resources and has some kind of an advantage going forward. Question is, this new buy from the group, can it change things? Can these attacks start to weigh on him? Michaels is kind of getting these like little paper cuts, like left and right, like the NRA thing, gas taxes, little kind of things. How is he going to respond? And do people pay attention to that or focus on the glowing TV ads he's running about being a guard, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and all that stuff? You know, they gravitate toward that. I don't know. We'll see.
We will see. Looking forward to it. And then let's get to stock picks this week. Rising is Milwaukee because they're basically in, yeah, but not technically formally announced, of locking up the Republican National Convention after they were selected as the recommendation to host the big event.
More news after we tape. That's been the theme.
Right.
But so late last Friday, the selection committee backed Milwaukee. Now, it's not a done deal.
Right.
I have to go through the full RNC, which is in early August, but Nashville has not even passed its framework yet. It's looking like this is pretty good chance Milwaukee gets it. So on the plus side, you're talking about Milwaukee getting a convention, an in-person one.
A real convention, right?
Maybe $200 million in economic impact, a chance to showcase a city. When Democrats picked Milwaukee for the 2020 convention, it was a chance for Milwaukee to prove we belong with the big boys. We can pull off a convention just like Miami can, just like New York, just like Los Angeles. We can be in that class of city for a big event like this. And it was taken away. Now, for Republicans, this is a chance to tweak the Democrats because Democrats picked Milwaukee to symbolically recommit to the blue wall, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. They lost those three states to Trump in 2016. This is about we are there for those voters. Well, Republicans now can go and say, hey, we're the ones who are actually coming to your backyard. They don't care about you. They only care about the big cities. We're here to talk about what concerns you. Oh, by the way, Trump made inroads with voters of color, places like Milwaukee. Polls of Hispanics are not good news for Joe Biden right now. You can make a pitch to voters of color, you know, right in their backyard. There's a downside to this, though. If Donald Trump's the nominee, I want you to imagine, Emily, Donald Trump is the nominee. He's on stage in August of 2024, July of 2024, in Milwaukee. Can he resist the temptation to rehash 2020, to say, I won Wisconsin, to say, these guys took it from me? Campaigns will tell you, you want to be forward-looking all the time.
Right.
If you're backward-looking, you're losing. There is a real concern among Republicans of the prospect of Donald Trump being the nominee and being on that stage and have this moment to look ahead to the future and just ripping Milwaukee, ripping Wisconsin, how it's stolen from, like basically, woe is me, this is stolen from me.
Right.
It could be a circus. Must-see TV.
Right.
It could be a circus.
It could rub a lot of people the wrong way. On the other side, the benefit is those wow counties, the suburban moms in the Milwaukee area. I'm sure they'll be coming to the convention if they're invited. I mean, it's going to be a big political showdown, and it could just really energize the base right before the election, which Democrats had hoped. I mean, of course, Joe Biden did win Wisconsin, but it just wasn't the event that they wanted. But a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle, even Democrats, Mayor Cavalier Johnson, he says, you know, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican convention. They're excited because they see dollar signs.
Yeah.
It's great for the community. Mixed this week, we have Attorney General candidate Eric Toney.
So a little follow-up on fundraising numbers from last week. So Toney had his best period to date. but that wasn't nearly as much as Adam Jarko had, and neither had nearly as much as Josh Call had. For Tony, I mean, go back to that convention vote on endorsement. He did really well. Surprised people how well he did. When he has the opportunity to connect with people, to communicate with voters, he connects with them. Did it at conventions, done it at all these like caucus events where he's won straw poll votes. He doesn't have the resources to communicate broadly with GOP primary voters. Jarko has got a six-figure TV buy that went up this week, going after Tony Evers. He also has Americans for Prosperity dropping about $270,000 on canvassing and other efforts to reach out to voters. Those are big deals. And primaries, those are big deals, those connections. Josh Call had $1.9 million in the bank at the end of June. I've never seen an AG candidate have that much money in the bank at that period. Went back and looked. Brad Schimmel had $1.1 million mid-2018. That seemed like a really good number, but Call is well above what those guys are. The question for Call is, even with that amount of cash, can you create an independent identity from the generic DR ballot this fall? Because we all know Joe Biden's numbers are not good. Mm. It creates a headwind out of Washington, D.C. Now, there are lots of things that happen between now and November, but if it were today, Republicans would have the advantage in a lot of ways because of the environment. Can Call carve out this niche where he's not just a generic Democrat? It's tough to do. Also, think about even with almost $2 million and more than that come November, you're going to have ads for the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race. Like, the noise is going to be intense all fall. If it's Jarko, I mean, Call runs an ad saying, this guy's never prosecuted a jaywalker. How can you trust him to be the top cop? Tony's issue is he charged and then dropped people, or charged and then dropped those charges against people who violated Evers' original stay-at-home order. That's an issue with the base. So just looking at where Tony is, he needs the opportunity to connect. He doesn't have the cash to connect.
All right, and we've got a few minutes left. Falling this week is Johnson's opposition to a nomination for the U.S. Attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin.
Yeah, so Sopan Shah. So Johnson actually forwarded her name to the White House
just
a few months ago.
Yes,
mm-hmm. As one of two candidates for this job. Now that she was picked by the White House, he says he's not going to support her nomination. It's the second time he's done this year. The other one's William Pocan, Mark Pocan's brother, nominated for a judgeship in Green Bay. Johnson says with Sopan that he's found deleted tweets in which she criticized Republicans, including himself, that she's a partisan. This is a symbol of Democrats with a two-tier justice system, one for the elite, the Democrats, one for the rest of us. Looking at her tweets, they complained about one, for example, is a retweet of a news account of the person who was shot in the Capitol during the violent protest in January of 2021. She wrote, this is terrorism. I don't know if that's necessarily partisan, but it's the list of things where he's like, this person is a partisan. The bigger question it raises about the Federal Nominating Commission. It was created in 1979 by the two U.S. senators at the time to identify candidates for federal appointments, U.S. attorney, judgeships, those kinds of things. It was supposed to take politics out of the equation. This shows you can't take politics out. And Johnson, Tammy Baldwin, ripped Ron Johnson saying, you support this person a while ago. You are basically throwing a fit over Trump losing the election by doing this. But if the commission keeps nominating people who then get rejected by one or the other, what's the point of doing it?
Right.
Baldwin's not clean on this. Gordon Giamperto, who was nominated to a federal judgeship in Milwaukee, he was forwarded to the White House by Baldwin and Johnson in 2017. Then she said she was made aware of comments he made about gay marriage and contraception, said, hey, this is too much. I'm not going to turn my blue slip. That's a tradition for home state senators with nominees of certain positions. You don't turn that slip, it doesn't go forward. So Johnson's were holding a slip for Sopan, so she's not going anywhere.
All right. Well, that will do it this week. We recapped quite a lot. That will do it this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week. Take care.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.